Blog Talk Radio.
So in a twist of irony, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show is on today. That's not the ironic part. The ironic part is that the Seth and Sean Sports Radio's fantasy football team, which we both combined, almost lost yesterday to Seth's favorite player, Joe Flacco. Just one player. Because Joe Flacco had the quarter of a lifetime, which most people would love for a whole game. But I'm looking up at my scoreboard because Seth does the, let's understand this. Seth does the draft. He consults a little bit. He does the draft 100%. He consults a little bit throughout the year, and then we get together around playoff time, and he has input. Is that about right?
Yeah. The draft is more important. It's the only thing I care about.
So yesterday I'm looking at who we're playing, and we're playing a team that has Philip Rivers and Joe Flacco, and it's a two quarterback league. So I'm kind of going, all right, we're in for some tough sliding here because our two quarterbacks are Mike Glennon and Jay Cutler, who I love Cutler, and I love Glennon. And Glennon continuously puts up -3 for the first 5 to 6 minutes of the game and then winds up with 21 points, always. So we have Mike Glennon, who happens to be on a bye week next week. Pray for Jay Locker's health. And all of a sudden, I see we're down 50-2. And I'm like, how on earth are we down 50-2? They only had 9 points in the 2 points in the Thursday night game. How did they get 48 points? And then I see Seth's favorite player, Joe Flacco, has put up 40 in the first quarter. 40! And I just say, how ironic would this be for us to lose the game to Seth's favorite player? Welcome to the show, everybody.
Yeah, it was. I was actually at Dos Caminos down in the meatpacking district, and I looked up about 3 o'clock, and I saw. Well, I'm not gonna lie. I saw 5 touchdowns and 300 yards. This is not gonna be good. But luckily, we had a little bit of bad luck. But we have, I think, the most points in the league by about 150, or at least 100. So we're cruising in at 4-2 right now, so we're doing fine. But, yes, it was a little bit ironic. People talk about, can anything ever be fixed? Are sports ever fixed? And, I'm not usually a big believer in that kind of thing. Yesterday brought up 2 examples of why I don't laugh it off, though. The Jets, underdog by 7.5, up to 10, I think, by game time, are trailing by 7 with 15 seconds left on their own 10-yard line. Geno Smith throws an interception for a touchdown. Washington, 3.5-point underdog, losing by 3 with 39 seconds to go, throws an interception in their own 20-yard line that's returned for a touchdown. You couldn't make this up. Well, could you make this up? I don't think so. But if you're ever going to, apparently, I just saw.
Vegas lost almost $750,000 on those 2 plays alone.
Who did?
Vegas.
Who's they?
Vegas. Vegas.
Yeah. I mean, this doesn't happen even jokingly. And I do a pick. I do a daily pick'em with a weekly pick'em with a friend of mine. We won one of them because of this and lost the other. And you just kind of wonder. When things like that happen, you just kind of wonder a little bit. And obviously, it's just it's no more than just kind of throwing crap out there. But when you see that twice in a week, that's kind of ugly. But your Jets did look significantly better, a significant improvement over last week. I'm not going to say you were happy, but I'm sure you were more satisfied seeing, seeing them in the game until the last minute, a couple minutes, than the abomination that was last week.
Yeah, well, I'll say this, and I said it to all my friends today at work, and I said this to you to begin with. Why can the Jets never be bad in a year of the quarterback? We can't be bad when there's an Andrew Luck out there. We can't be bad when there's a Drew Stafford out there. We can't be bad when there's a John Elway out there. We can't be bad when there's a Peyton Manning out there. No. We got to be bad when there's a Mark Sanchez out there, when there's a Chad Pennington out there, and this year when there's going to be a Brett Hundley and a Jameis Winston out there that really don't have that cannon arm that need to play. We're just never bad. It's like the Brett Saberhagen years. Every other year we're bad, and every other year we're good. So in the bad years, it's the quarterbacks don't come out, and in the good years, they always do come out. So we're screwed.
There are a couple other good quarterbacks out there. Marcus Mariota, Sean Marion from Oregon State, your boy Brett Hundley, who got humbled against a resurgent Oregon team. So it is not a quarterback unfriendly draft. Number one,
I'm not talking about quantity. I'm talking quality. Is there a overall number one surefire quarterback out there right now?
Well, supposedly it's Mariota.
Is it possible that Mariota, is he absolutely the number one pick in the draft? No hands down. No qualms. That's not true.
No, he's favored to be the number one pick in the draft. It would not be it's not an unconditional.
I want a guy that's an unconditional. I want an Andrew Luck on my team. I want a Peyton Manning. I want an Eli Manning.
So do I. Have Eli Manning. I said so do I.
But you have him. You've won two Super Bowls because quarterback play rules the day. It does. It's been shown in every game this year. When the quarterback plays well, the teams win. And when even going to the Raiders yesterday, Derek Carr had a great game, and they played well, and they won.
No, they
I would
didn't.
Rather have Derek Carr on my team right now than Geno Smith. There are probably three quarterbacks in the NFL I'd want less than Geno Smith right now. Three.
You can't name three, or there aren't three?
You think that's all I can name? Three.
Who are the three starting quarterbacks you'd rather have than Geno?
No. Starting quarterbacks, I'd rather have Geno Smith over.
Who are the three?
Matt Cassel. I'd rather have him over Matt Cassel or Teddy Bridgewater, either one of them. I just don't think either one is very good. So I'd rather have him over that. Man, now you're making me think. Hold on a second. I had three in my head the other day.
You're not going to take him over Bortles.
I wouldn't take him over Glennon. I wouldn't take him over Carr. If Drew Stanton was the quarterback, I'd probably take him over Drew Stanton. I'd want him over Carson Palmer.
Really?
I really would. I don't think Carson Palmer is any good in this offense. Like, you also have to look at the fit, right? And I'd want him over Ryan Fitzpatrick. So those are my guys. Those are the guys I'd want him over. Everybody else in the entire NFL, I'd want over Geno Smith.
Wow. Now I'm trying to think. There's not too many, really, I would argue. I'll be honest with you. Brian Hoyer has been very good. You know, that Flacco guy. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I may want him over Locker because you're a Locker guy. I'm not. Locker can't stay healthy, period. And, you know, he's maybe over Sam Bradford / Austin Davis or Austin Smith or whatever his name is. I don't know enough about Austin Smith. But, yeah, I mean, the point is made. We spend a second round pick on a quarterback that you're not sure is a great fit. And, you know, Geno has proven to be a disappointment. Now, to be fair, he has not had an enormous amount of help. The receivers are still among the worst in the NFL. Eric Decker is not a number one wideout. We know this. And everyone else, Decker is a number two. Curley's a three. And it just kind of goes down from there. The Jets are saddled in mediocrity. and that's a problem. Now, when they took Chad Pennington, they took him with the 18th pick. For the 18th pick, you did pretty well with Pennington. But obviously, he's never had much of an arm. And it's a team that, unfortunately, on the offensive end is just going nowhere. And as solid as the defensive line may be, and as solid as the defense may be, the offense is just not good enough to get them where they need to go and where they want to go. D. Milner, your top cornerback, tore his Achilles. He is out for the season. Did you know this or no?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay. It's just not, you know, it's a very sad story when the best New York football team is playing up in Buffalo. And that's what we're looking at right now. The Giants without Victor Cruz, I'm a torn patella. I don't know how long he's out for, but I assume it's a pretty significant period of time. And if anyone who saw the Giants game, and I feel bad for anyone who did, unless you are an Eagle fan, because even if you're not an Eagle or a Giant fan, it was a brutal game to watch. The Giants don't have a number one threat unless Odell Beckham. I mean, you're asking a lot from a rookie who missed the first 3 weeks of the season. So, welcome to the Seth and Sean Show. Seth Kame and Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com. Anyone wants to call in, 760-283-0846. Unfortunately, yet again, Mr. Reed, Keegan Reed will not be here for our NHL preview. We are pushing it back one more week. Either we're going to do it then, or we're just going to, or Sean and I, God help us, or God help me, will be running it. Well, how was Florida?
Florida was awesome. I got to tell you, it's really, really hard to be sad in the happiest place on earth. I had a fantastic time. I definitely recommend going in October rather than going in June, July, August, or anytime around the Christmas time. If you can get out there, definitely go the first couple of hours because then the park's not as crowded. Great time. Thank you very much to my aunt and uncle who went well and beyond what they should have. And, yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than Disney World. I didn't make it over to ESPN Studios. I'd like to do that the next time down there. The Wide World of Sports, they have their own complex down there. I'll do that the next time I go. But overall, great trip. And I'm finally getting my voice back. I'm not really sure if that's from screaming at the TV yesterday or Disney, but I'm not really sure. But we'll get to that in a little bit. The rest of the NFL, though, you know, Seth, the Raiders looked really good with Derek Carr yesterday, although the Chargers beat him. The Jaguars had a chance to win, and Gus Bradley, with 12 seconds left, doesn't give his kicker another 4 or 5 yards. They had a chance to win with a 55-yard field goal. Mike Nugent blows the field goal, and we have a tie. Look, there was a lot going on in the NFL yesterday, and supposedly Tom Brady's back. 370-some-odd yards he's back, and I get to see him up close and personal against my Jets on Thursday night. Yay.
Oh, I can't wait. And, yeah, and actually, you didn't even mention the most impressive performance, I believe, of the week. You know, neither of us were particularly high on the Dallas Cowboys with good reason. Their offense, you know, DeMarco Murray can't stay healthy. The offensive line isn't very good. The defense was possibly one of the worst of all time last year. They lose their best player in Sean Lee. They lose their best lineman in DeMarcus Ware. Maurice Claiborne is an utter disaster. And they go to Seattle and out-tough the toughest team of the last few years, the Seattle Seahawks. And outside of, a special teams touchdown, they really kind of dominated this game. Now, I don't think DeMarco Murray can keep up this rate. This is a solid player who's been hurt every year and is now on track for over 450 carries this season. They got to give him some help somewhere along the line. But this is shocking how good this team has been so far this year.
Well, DeMarco Murray has some backups, which I think are going to get a little bit more time in the next couple of weeks. Lance Dunbar and Joseph Randle, who got some play last night. He had, I believe, it was 6 carries in the first quarter, 6 in the second, 8 in the third, and 9 in the fourth when they were trying to run the clock out. So The one thing that the Cowboys have not had is they haven't blown out anybody, which if they were able to do that, they could sit DeMarco Murray for the fourth quarter. They haven't done that. So looking at their schedule going forward, and I'm going to get that in a second, I think they have a couple of easy games coming up, or what you would say is easy games. So they play the Giants next week, which could conceivably be an easy game. They play the Redskins, then they play the – I'm sorry?
I said it could be.
Yeah, then they play the Redskins, which could be an easy game. Then they play the Cardinals. The Cardinals not an easy game. And then they play the Jaguars. And then they have a bye week. So if they can get him some rest in these next four games and not give him 30 carries every game, I think he'll be fine coming into the bye week, and then he comes out of the bye week to play your Giants again. So, and then on a short week against the Eagles on Thanksgiving, which the Cowboys always play. So if they can get him through the next three or four weeks, I think they'll be fine. But it's not necessarily DeMarco Murray. I think it's more about the emergence of Terrence Williams as the number two, who had one of the best catches I've ever seen yesterday. And Tony Romo is being kept upright. He's not getting hit. His back is not flailing. He's not getting out of control, and he's not making Tony Romo mistakes. Now, remember, Tony Romo was Andy Dalton before Andy Dalton, right? Because he was the guy that could never win in the playoffs, couldn't win the big game. And a couple of years ago, he quieted that by winning the last – oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, he won the last game of the year.
I was going to say, when did Tony Romo quiet his critics? I don't remember that conversation.
Am I missing this? Yeah, he lost.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. They've played the last 3 years in the division title and lost.
Yeah, I'm still on the Disney hype, so I'm kind of losing
apparently
it a little
so.
Bit. Yeah, apparently. But he's quieted him so far this year. I think
yes.
More to the point, he stayed healthy. This team hasn't incurred the wrath of the injury in the regular season, aside from Sean Lee. So let's keep that. I mean, all their position players, all their starters have pretty much stayed healthy, including their whole offensive line. So let's see if their offensive line, like Tyson Smith and Frederick in the middle, who everybody chastised Barry Jones last year for taking a center in the first round. Well, he's been playing nonstop. So they're one surprise. Let's flip over to the AFC for the surprise so far, which has been your Cleveland Browns. I don't say your, I say you collective, the Cleveland Browns, who have lost Alex Mack, which you don't know Alex Mack. Alex Mack is one of those guys that people just don't know. Alex Mack has played every single snap for the last 6 years at center. He's a Pro Bowl center, and he's played that for the Browns. So that is an injury. Who knows how much that will be felt. They actually are not putting him on the injury reserve because they hope to get him back in 8 to 10 weeks. But Brian Hoyer is doing everything that Geno Smith is not. He's throwing the ball. They're running the ball. And he's not making mistakes. And if you can do that in the NFL, you win.
He's also not skipping meetings to go to a movie.
That was a great line. Did you see that in Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback today?
I did.
That was a great line. And I don't remember – I'm quoting the quarterback, the article, and I don't remember who quoted it exactly. But he's like, Phillip Rivers, Peyton Manning, and I don't remember – oh, and Drew Brees, don't miss Saturday night meetings. They run Saturday night meetings. And Geno Smith misses one.
Well, come on. People, there was a big line to see Gone Girl. So I understand that he just didn't want to wait too much longer. So, 20 minutes in, and we could talk football for years. I mean, the NFL, it hasn't been a great NFL season, but it is nice. There have been some nice stories. Brian Hoyer, the backup for years in New England. Comes to Cleveland, hometown guy, does well, tears his ACL, they draft Manziel. And Hoyer just does his thing and plays extremely solid, and just they play tough. And you kind of wonder where Pittsburgh is thinking right now, because that is not a team you expect to lose by 21 to Cleveland.
No, that was Seth. That was mostly defense, though, because Roethlisberger had an awful game. I mean, their defense was swarming all over him, and I just know this because I was watching my fantasy stats. Roethlisberger only had 4 points in the first half. That's not going to cut it. They were down 21-3. So the defense is key to that team. And just like I said before, Brian Hoyer doesn't make mistakes. He may not make the great pass. He may not make the bullet pass, but he doesn't make mistakes. And the best part about this for Browns fans, and yes, I'm saying it could get better for Browns fans, they don't have Josh Gordon yet. They're getting him back week 10. They don't have their best wideout. Jordan Cameron had a welcome back week this week, putting up 19 fantasy points. I know that because I haven't been for Jimmy Graham. And they're getting their best wideout back in a couple of weeks. That can only help this team.
I guess we should also talk about last night, as we said, the Giants pretty much humiliated by the Eagles. But what made things worse is the torn patella of Victor Cruz. And, you know, in a city, and for those of you who are not from the Northeast, the New York, Philly area, these cities hate each other. Truly hate each other. And, you know, when you saw Cruz go down, and the injury didn't, the way he went down looked bad, it didn't, you couldn't see what happened, but you could just see, you could see the pain in his face the second it hit. He's now out for the year. He may be out the beginning of next year. A brutal hit to a guy really well-liked in the NFL, an undrafted player out of Massachusetts who really came from nowhere to become a bona fide number one receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, you're getting no argument from me. I mean, do I think he's one of the top 20 wideouts in the NFL? Probably not. I really don't. I think he has done well with what he's done. And it's funny because I was talking with a Giants fan last night. I watched the game with a couple of Giants fans. And they were criticizing Cruz before the injury. But they said, is it possible? And Seth, you are much bigger of a Giants follower than I am. Definitely a bigger fan. But is it possible that Victor Cruz didn't get drafted because Victor Cruz can't catch all the balls? I mean, Victor Cruz has had a terrible season this year so far. Take away the injury. He has dropped more balls than I can remember any number one wide receiver dropping. So his hypothesis, my friend's hypothesis was, there's a reason Cruz didn't get drafted, and it's not just the speed, because you don't only need speed to get drafted. Is it possible that this is the real Victor Cruz now, where he just doesn't catch everything? I don't know. I mean, it was his hypothesis.
I find it a little bit hard to fathom that the Giants, who are a pretty conservative organization by nature, and not someone who ever really spent an enormous amount on wideouts, would have invested in $50 million in a receiver with bad hands. He has not been great this year. He was not phenomenal last year, but he was great 2 years ago. He's still a big threat. He's still someone every cornerback in the NFL respects, like him or dislike him. And he is a number one receiver when healthy, and as big a threat, and as big a deep threat as you're going to find. So
was he the number one receiver 2 years ago, or was that Nick?
2 years ago, it was pretty much an even split. 80 catches for about 1,000 yards.
And there's a reason I'm going here, because is Nick the number one receiver right now? Absolutely not, right?
No.
Okay. Is it possible? I sound like an attorney. I'm sorry. I'm just saying sometimes you're a number one receiver because you're thrust into the job because there's nobody better than you on the team. And I'm not sure Victor Cruz is any more of a number one receiver than Eric Decker is. I think they are good receivers on bad teams. And because there's nobody better than them, they're number one receivers. That's just my thought. I mean, you and I have had this discussion. How many number ones are there? Probably 20, right? Some teams have two of them. I mean, can you say that Ashlon Jeffery is a number one receiver? I think you can.
Yes.
Okay, so it's possible to have two number ones on one team. So
well, kind of running through the numbers, you know, teams quickly. You know, Denver, you got Thomas. No one in Kansas City. No one in Oakland. Keenan Allen is not maybe a number one definitive, not, but I'm not sure he's there yet. Trying to think out.
Is Emmanuel Sanders a number one?
No.
Okay.
A good number two, but he's a number two.
I'm not arguing. Just saying. Okay.
You know, going to the next division, Indy, Hilton's borderline number one. Tennessee has nobody. Jacksonville has nobody. Who's the team I'm missing down there? Houston has Andre Johnson, but he's kind of at the back of his end of his career, but I guess he's still a number one.
Pittsburgh has Antonio Brown.
Yes, since he has A.J. Green, so that's four.
Green.
Cleveland has Gordon, that's five.
Wait, Gordon, that's five. The Ravens, I don't know if Steve Smith could be a number one this year.
Yeah, it's a maybe.
That's six. The Eagles don't have a number one.
We'll go to the AFC East. There's nobody.
Mike Wallace?
You have a Sammy? No. No chance.
Sammy Watkins?
Who?
Sammy Watkins? Not yet.
Sammy Watkins is the closest, but it's too early to say at this point whether he
Eagles
becomes number one.
The Cowboys are Dez Bryant.
Seven.
The Redskins, I think Kim Garcon's the number one. I do.
Yeah.
I think he was
okay.
Number one. Fine. Either him or Deshaun Jackson. They have a number one on that team. So
okay,
that's eight.
I'll go with it.
Johnson is nine. I think Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson are both number one. So that's 10 and 11.
I agree.
The Bears, too, that's 12 and 13. The Vikings don't have anybody. The Panthers don't have anybody.
The Lions have Megatron. You may want to go back to Detroit.
I said that. I said Calvin Johnson.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Okay.
So we're up to 14. The Saints, Colston?
Nobody. The closest you have is Jimmy Grant.
Falcons have two.
You can still say Roddy White is one.
Okay, so that's 16. The Bucks have one, 17. The Cardinals have one, 18. The Niners don't have any. I'm sorry?
Do you still put Fitzgerald as a definitive one?
Yep.
Okay.
The Niners, Bolden, Crabtree, no.
No.
Seahawks, Percy Harvin?
No.
It's
hurt too often.
So he's 19. So we got 19 number one.
Yeah, he's – I don't think I would take Cruz above any of the people you mentioned. But he at his best, he certainly was in the ballpark. The discussion with the lower tier of those guys. And, you know, regardless, you never want to see anyone get hurt. You never want to see anyone, you know, he was crying on the field. And it is a credit to the Eagles and to Philadelphia, which is something I say very often, that stadium got very quiet very quickly. And you just hope that he recovers and is able to resume his career next year.
Agreed. I will tell you, though, I don't have personal experience with patella tendon ruptures, which is, thank the Lord, I don't have that. But I do have a lot of experience with patella femoritis, which is basically arthritis of the patella. Patella tendon is the tendon that connects your kneecap to the rest of your bones.
Yes.
Just to give you a little idea of what it is. When you rupture your patella, you're out 6 to 8 months minimum. Minimum. Before you can start doing anything. So you'd be lucky to see him at full strength next year. If you want, for those people that like to watch injuries, and I'm not saying I'm one of them, but the two most devastating injuries I've ever seen, and I've seen Napoleon McCallum, and I've seen Joe Theismann, so these are above those. If you want to take a look at Gary Baxter or Wendell Davis, those are the, and I'm going back for Wendell Davis, that was back in the vet. They are the only two people to rupture both patella tendons on the same play. So I can just hear Seth.
How did you know that? How did you know that?
What? How do I know that they're the only two, or how do I know that it happened?
How do you know both?
Well, Wendell Davis happened on national television. I don't remember when, but it happened on national television. I was watching the game. For the same reason you know Napoleon McCallum, because it happened on Monday Night Football. Gary Baxter did it, and he, in the article that I read about Gary Baxter, I remember when he did it, he was a cornerback on the Browns, he referenced
yep.
Wendell Davis. So that's how I know that both of them did it. Let's put it this way. The hardest part of Cruz getting hurt wasn't when he went down. Because when he went down, if you look at his knee, it was bent. Remember, the tendon that he tore is the one that connects the kneecap to the rest of the bones. They straightened out his leg. That's where that's the most pain. So basically, it was like he went down like he was shot. Well, imagine having both legs come out from you the same way. That's what Davis and Baxter went through.
Well, I remember the Davis. I don't remember Gary Baxter at all. But I think most, you know, it's a vague recollection. It must be 25 years ago. I actually just looked up YouTube trying to find it, and I didn't see it. Going from the Sunday ball to the Saturday ball, did you ever think you'd really see the day where college football was real? The high is pretty much being run out of a state that 90% of the country can't spell. This
M-I-S-I-P-P-I. M-I-S-I-P-P-I.
I'm very glad that you can spell it. But yes, it is being run in a 50 square mile radius, I believe, of Jackson and Oxford, or Starkville, excuse me, in Starkville and Oxford, where you have the number one and the worthy number one Mississippi State Bulldogs, who have won three games in a row against top 10 opponents. And you have Ole Miss, who is number three, I believe, this week. And now you're legitimately looking at a potential showdown between these two teams. Mississippi State pretty convincingly beat number two Auburn. Ole Miss beat pretty convincingly Texas A&M. I know Mississippi State has a week off, then they play Kentucky. They have Alabama near the end of the year. But that's – Mississippi has a tougher schedule. But you could be looking at the Egg Bowl as number one versus number two, or at least number one – you know, two undefeated teams, I should say. It would be hard for the Florida State Notre Dame loser to be not included in that. But you ever think you'd see the day?
Well, I think we get to the same point again, right? Can you have two from the same conference in the playoffs? Because I think you just made a point for it, didn't you?
I did. I think, you know, it would be very difficult. Now, again, it's too early to tell. The Big Ten still has Michigan State. The Big 12 has Baylor, who came somehow out of nowhere, came back from 21 down in the fourth quarter to beat Baylor in a defensive masterpiece, 61-58. You still have Florida State in the ACC. The Pac-10, you probably have Oregon as the favorite, would be my guess, after their dumping of UCLA this weekend. It's possible. I don't know. If you have an 11-1 Mississippi State team that beat four top 10 teams, I think that's more impressive than an 11-1 Michigan State team that the only really good team they played at Oregon, they lost by 20.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking at, right? I mean, we're looking at a Florida State team that doesn't have a good schedule except for Notre Dame coming up. We have Notre Dame, who doesn't have a good schedule except for Florida State coming up, which is
this week. Who almost lost to North Carolina this week.
And then we have the SEC, which we all know what they are. We have the Big 12, which quite frankly had the game of the week with Baylor.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that team. I love watching that team. It's like the old Texas Tech team with Klingsbury or Klingler or any of those guys. Where all they do is just throw the ball all over the place and defense be damned. It's nice for defense to be damned.
It's kind of fun sometimes. And, you know, I think college football, to be honest, and I know most people that are listening to the show are bigger pro fans than college. I think college has been much more enjoyable this season. Maybe it's kind of a step back a little bit of Alabama. I don't know why, but I think the games have been much more entertaining. And I thought that the last few years, but I think there's been a distinct difference this year. And, you know, we'll see what happens. The Heisman race, you know, may come down to a Mississippi State quarterback, you know, two Mississippi quarterbacks. Bo Wallace at Ole Miss, Dak Prescott at Mississippi State. Todd Gurley,
yeah,
who's probably
yeah.
the Heisman favorite.
Understand. You're rooting for Bryce Petty, aren't you?
I'm rooting for him because I picked it. But I have, unless Stephon Diggs gets 3,000 yards in the next six games for the University of Maryland, I don't really have that much of a rooting interest.
Okay.
Baylor is a lot of fun to watch.
I think Brett Hundley is probably out of it for me.
I would think so. But, you know, there's a lot. We're saying this now. There's a lot of season to go. We're not even halfway through. And, you know, that's why this is always the best time of year, because hockey started last week. And as we said, we'll have our hockey preview hopefully next week with Keegan. In 2 weeks, we'll have our NBA preview, which is a boatload of fun. And we'll probably have college basketball pretty soon after that. So it may be three straight weeks of previews, which means, Mr. Palmer, we're going to have to read up.
No. You have to read up. I just have to read up on the basketball. I got the other two down pat. I'm good to go. My New York Islanders are making the playoffs, baby. 2-0 already. Got the Rangers tomorrow night. Really looking forward to it. Exciting times for the New York Islanders. But then again, I say that every year.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's as exciting to me as regular season baseball, what can I tell you? But, however, the playoff baseball has been quite different.
Yeah. You opened the door here. But is it exciting as postseason baseball?
That was my segue. Regular season hockey is pretty interesting. Regular season baseball is not. However, postseason is, and although they are rained out tonight, Kansas City, really? They just seem to be on that roll. And, you know, they seem, you know, they're kind of the Cinderella to the ball. Everybody's rooting for them. And even though I went to school at the University of Maryland, as most of you know, a lot of friends from Baltimore are very psyched about their team. You've got to be pretty discouraged right now. Down 2-0, going to KC. That's asking a lot. It's asking a lot for Baltimore to win 4 out of 5 against this team, the way they're playing right now.
And it's asking a lot without a number one ace. You don't have one on that Baltimore team. Not to say that you do for Kansas City, but it's hard when you don't have a regular season Clayton Kershaw or a Max Scherzer, or a guy that you know is going, or Pedro Martinez, a guy that is going to take the ball and win it. You know you're going to win a game. You know it. The Orioles best hope is Chris Tillman. And because of the rain out, he may actually go in game four. You're right. That's asking a lot. And my buddies and I, I'd like your opinion on this. And for those that don't know, Seth and I sometimes talk before the show. We didn't talk at all about this at all before the show. What type of team do you compare this Kansas City Royal team to in the past? Because a bunch of us at work were trying to put a comp on them. I got two of my own, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think it's actually a team that we discussed maybe in last week. It's a team that plays small ball. It's a team with very little power, although Mike Moustakas has become the Babe Ruth of this postseason. But it's a team with good pitching but no definitive ace, and that's kind of where the 85 St. Louis Cardinal comparison goes a bit astray. But you haven't had small ball, really, over the last two decades. It just hasn't been there for the high-level teams.
I agree with you until I thought today about the bullpen. The Kansas City Royal bullpen is fantastic. Right? You get seven innings from your regular starters, and you know the game's over. It's a done deal. They got the
Are you going to make the comparison to the 90 Reds?
There you go. Bingo to the 90 Reds. Right down to the third baseman.
How do you like me pulling that one out of left field?
Look, I did say it was over in the seventh inning. I did say it was over after six. If I said it was over after seven, you'd probably go to the Yankees with Rivera and Wetland, right?
No, because the Yankees did not play small ball for the most part. They're not a small ball team. They're a power team. I mean, I actually shouldn't say that. I don't think of them as either a small ball team or a power team.
Okay.
They were somewhere in between. But the Reds, kind of thinking back to that team in 90, now their ace was Jose Rio.
Yes, very good.
Who was a very good pitcher, but not someone you would say is a top ace in the league. I mean, he had one or two years that were great. But, I mean, I don't think James Shields is an unreasonable comparison. They had Eric Davis a little bit past his prime, I believe, who may have been the power in that team, but it was not a power-hitting team. And I don't remember all the players. I know Barry Larkin. I'm assuming Chris Sabo was probably the third baseman.
Yeah. I mean, they did have Barry Larkin, right?
Right.
They had
Barry
Paul
Larkin
O'Neil.
Was certainly not a power hitter.
Paul O'Neill was their best power hitter.
More than Eric Davis.
Right. Well, I don't think I'm not sure Eric Davis was on that team. I think by then he was actually on the
Dodgers.
Because he played with Strawberry at that point. But let me see. 1990 Reds. Reds roster. I got it right here. Reds. The Brilliance. Okay, so their top pitchers were Tom Browning and Jose Rio and Danny Jackson, who happened to play on the Royals before that. Their catcher was Joe Oliver. Around the horn, they went Hal Morris at first, Ron Oyster at second. I love that name. That was like my favorite guy. It was him and Bill Doran. The short and Mariano Duncan. Their shortstop was Barry Larkin, Hall of Famer, and then Chris Sabo was at third. You're right, Eric Davis was on this team. He played left field. Billy Hatcher played center, and Paul O'Neill played right. So their top home run hitter was probably O'Neill. I mean, I'm bringing up here we go. So the top home run hitter, I'm sorry, was Sabo. With 25. Davis hit 24, and O'Neill hit 16. And Davis led the team with 86 RBIs. That was the year that Barry Larkin was the MVP.
Yeah, you look at that team. Hal Morris, nice player, certainly not a power hitter. Actually, Todd Benzinger was their starting first baseman, actually. Not even Hal Morris. So, Benzinger was truly not a power hitter. It was a team that really survived and thrived on the Nasty Boys, Randy Myers, Rob Dibble, and Norm Charlton. Was acquired,
Brown.
I believe, from the Seahawks. The Mariners, excuse me.
Browning went 15-9, Rio went 14-8. Jack Armstrong, who actually started the All-Star game that year, he went 11-5 to start and wound up 12-9. So he went 1-4 in the second half. Danny Jackson went 6-6. And Steve Sand, I've never heard of Steve Sand, went 12-3. He only pitched in 15 games. How on earth is that?
How do you get a decision in 15 games? If you pitch in 15 games, how do you get a decision in all 15?
That's what I'm looking up right now. I don't even remember Steve Sand. So that is very interesting. Hold on. I don't see a Steve Sand. There was no such player. Forget that idea. Charlton went 12-9. A reliever won 12 games, which tells you how often they used him. Those relievers were used quite a bit, 66, 68, and 56 games. Norm Charlton, the reliever, Norm Charlton, pitched 154 innings. That's unheard of.
It's unfathomable in this era.
Yeah, so that's the team that I think that this team reminds me of the most. And right down to the third baseman coming up with some homers in Moustakas, the Moose. But it's very enjoyable. Let's switch over to the National League, where the Cardinals kind of have some problems. Starting with their catcher, Yadier Molina, who has an oblique injury and will probably not be playing the next couple of games. And we also, when he went out in the regular season, how that affected the team. And now he's out at least two games, probably one game, probably two games in the playoffs. And Adam Wainwright, the guy that you think is the number one, the guy that you think is the drop-dead guy that's going to bail you out, is having elbow problems again. And Mike Matheny's not even sure if he can pitch him again. He says he's probably going to, but that's a big loss if they can't pitch Wainwright. Because for all of us Mets fans, remember, Wainwright's got the best curveball in the majors.
I mean, in that, it's kind of hard to imagine. It's just hard for me to fathom that the Kansas City Royals are really the overwhelming favorite at this point to go to the World Series.
You almost said Super Bowl too. I said that today at work.
Yeah, I did pull it back in time. The San Francisco St. Louis series, you kind of figure was going to go seven. It's just that kind of series. You know, St. Louis may be in trouble. They are, I think, more talented than San Francisco. But it'll come down the wire. And Kansas City may have, they have three games at home. I don't know. I don't know if it's 2-2, 1-1-1, or 2-3-2. You would know that better than I would. But
yeah,
at least
2-1.
2-1-1. Okay. So Kansas City has two games, could sweep, could go up 3-1. It puts you in a very rough place. And
yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. It's going to be very, very difficult for a team to come back from what they have right now. And at the end of the day, it's very interesting because no matter who wins that National League Series, I think you're going to have like 95% of the country rooting for Kansas City, if not more.
So the other big news, and it kind of hasn't really been publicized as much just because of everything going on in the baseball and football worlds. Pretty much from a consensus, the second best basketball player in the world, out 2 months, Kevin Durant, gets injured during training camp. Do you see any long... I don't see much of an impact really long-term on this. I almost think it may be, I don't want to say a good thing. And when you have someone who's played as much as Durant has over the last 4 or 5 years, next
Seth, you're breaking up, buddy.
Okay. Let me try this.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree that he needs some rest. The problem is he's got a broken foot. And for a guy that's running all the time, it's not exactly the easiest, like, injury to come back from, a broken foot. Not to say that it's not possible. Look, people do it all the time. But once you have a foot injury, let's look at some of the guys that have had foot injuries over the course of the last couple of decades, at least the known ones, like Gaskins and Sam Bowie. I mean, granted, those are taller guys, but feet injuries for basketball players, where all they're doing is hopping up and down, especially a guy that is reliant on his speed and quickness, which Durant does, I don't think this is a two-month injury. I think this is more of a three-month injury. And does that mean long-term that in this season, is it going to affect it? No. Look, Westbrook was out for 3 months, and they survived. So I think this is the same type of thing. I think it's good for the short term. I think it's bad for the short term, but very good for the long term.
Yeah, Oklahoma City is in a position where, while the home field – I mean, obviously they would love to have the home court advantage, but I think arrested Kevin Durant is the most important thing that you can have. You know, this is a team with Reggie Jackson, with Steven Adams, with obviously with Russell Westbrook. And Ron Guidry?
Oh, you said Reggie Jackson. I always think somebody makes a mistake when they say that there's a basketball player, Reggie Jackson. Come on.
My bad. How silly of me to forget the 78 Yankees when I'm talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder. But obviously this would not, you know, even with Durant, they're probably not as talented as the Clippers. They're not as good as the Spurs, I don't think. Although they match up quite nicely with the Spurs, as we've seen over the years. But it's a different situation. And, you know, when you have these things, these type of things occur, you know, it gives it perspective. You get to see what other talent you have on the team. And, you know, if he's back by, say, Christmas, give or take, or start of the year, they still have 3 or 4 months to meld everything together. And I don't think arrested Kevin Durant is the worst thing in the world.
No, again, I don't think that this is a bad deal at all. I think that short term, yeah, you're going to lose a couple more games because of it, but long term, I think they benefit. I remember Durant's the one that wanted to take, said he was overburdened with all the play in the Olympics and whatnot, and that's why he took some time out. Well, this gives him a little bit more time. For better or for worse, it gives him a little bit more time. So he'll be out for a couple of months, and we'll have our NBA preview not next week, but the week after. NHL is next week, then college basketball is in 3 weeks, where maybe we'll get Ryan the Rabbi on for a little bit of expert analysis for him. Or maybe our esteemed colleague, Randy Zellier.
Or we will reach out. It's actually about time we reached out to the biggest writer and Bleacher Report right now, Jared Zwirling, who has graced us many times on the show. Got about 5-6 minutes left. Anything specific you want to hit on? You know, kind of near our end of show. I mean, what were your thoughts on the whole Chris Bosh isn't going to talk to LeBron because of this, because of that. Any thoughts on that whatsoever, or is it just kind of meaningless fluff?
Can't we all just get along? Doesn't matter. Come on. They hugged it out. It didn't mean anything to me. Look, Bosh seemed a little perturbed. I don't think he's totally off base. But you know what? People get offended, and then you make up, right? I mean, it wasn't – to me, it's not such a big deal. I think it's not a little overblown. It's actually very overblown.
I guess the other thing we should talk about is Todd Gurley suspended from Georgia for signing autographs for possibly $400 off of this, if I'm not mistaken. It looks like he's only going to be suspended for the one game, and they won 34-0 at Missouri, a ranked team, without him. Does it feel strange that Gurley is suspended for this, and Jameis Winston, who seems to have done everything under the sun, he actually is now, apparently this came out today, that he is being looked at also for some kind of signing, you know, making money off signatures. Does it feel weird to see Winston playing at FSU, considering?
Well, it didn't seem weird. It seemed weird that he was throwing the ball so well against my Syracuse Orange. But other than that, I would have liked him to miss the game. But the thing that the announcer said quite adequately and quite impressively is, it doesn't really matter because the second and third string is better than most people's first. So just bring in another player, no big deal for Florida State. But the fact is, yeah, it seems a little weird, but supposedly there was proof that Gurley broke the rules. And right now there hasn't been proof that Winston did. So I know people have gotten on the NCAA just saying, oh, he only got $400, he only did $25 for this, for that. Doesn't matter. He broke the rules. You break the rules, you pay the price. Maybe a game, maybe two games, whatever they decide, he broke the rules. If it comes out that Jameson Winston broke the rules, he should be suspended as well. So far, aside from a New York Times article, there hasn't been any proof that he broke the rules. So is it weird seeing him with all this cloud over him? Sure. But show me some proof, then you can cause a penalty. And then I'm good with it.
All right, we got about 3 minutes to go. Anything you want to close with?
Sure. Trevor Gillies, get the hell out of my sport. I don't know if you saw, he is an AHL hockey player that used to play for the Islanders.
Is this Clark Gillies' kid?
I don't think he's related. A couple of days ago, he's 35 years old. He's playing against 19-year-olds in an AHL game. And, Seth, I look this up because you will be astonished by the video. He gets into a fight with a guy, a 19-year-old. The guy's face is straight down on the ice. He picks him up by the back and throws him straight down face first into the ice.
Ooh.
With both hands. Well, sort of like you're in the WWE.
I was going to say, this sounds like an Evan Lipton.
When he was on the Islanders, he had, I believe it was a 14-game suspension for something similar. He got a 12-game suspension from the AHL. Get out of my sport. You are the reason why people are calling for an end to fighting. You are the reason why people are saying that hockey is too violent. Get out of my sport. You're 35 years old. Hang them up and be done with you. That's it. You're upset.
I'm watching this right now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was pretty not classy. I don't have too much. I did come across this where apparently Spike Lee is doing some documentary about the Knicks or about Phil Jackson. And Phil has been a little bit interesting, obviously the president of the Knicks. He's putting the team through mindfulness training this season. I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'm assuming this is some kind of Eastern religion philosophy kind of goes along with him. So he's doing that with this team. And he's told Spike, who's apparently doing a documentary about him, that Spike doesn't really know anything about basketball. Now, I've seen Spike once or twice at the Garden. Certainly not as diehard a fan as you could ever ask for. Again, I guess it just kind of distinguishes being a fan is one thing, being part of the game is the other. And Spike has been a fan for 40 years. And to hear Phil Jackson kind of say, yeah, he doesn't really know anything. I found it pretty funny. Nothing too major otherwise this week. For Seth, next 3 weeks, we have hockey preview, basketball preview, college basketball preview. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens. Seth and Sean Sports Radio, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.
See ya.